Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, if you have a car question, now's the time to give us a call. The lines are wide open. Gil is finally awake. He's actually in the front of the plane. He's flying the plane. It's his job to make me behave, and Dave Martin, who's sitting next to me from Martin's Auto, him to behave. And he's going to take your calls, and he's going to say, what's your name? And that's about it. Then he says in my ears during the show, he says, your next caller is Ben. And so then we go to Ben. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion, this segment is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. He's on I-17 in Bell Road. Has ASE certified technicians, been in the business since 1987. He works on domestic and import, both gas and diesel, and he has an outstanding staff. So it's important to know that if you live in that geographical area, Bell and I-10, he's in the I-17, and he's in the northeast corner of that area, then you don't have a shop, then stop by Kurtz. Well, Dave Martin, today, or this year, you and your father are celebrating a specific milestone, which I don't know anybody else is, with the exception of some of the dealers who obviously pass that on in their families and stuff like that. So tell me what's important right now.
Well, good morning, Mark. Yeah, you know, it's really exciting this year. I'm a second-generation owner. My dad started in the service station business back in 1971. And it's been called Martin's Automotive Repair ever since, and we're celebrating 50 years this year.
And in the location you're at now, you've been in business. Have you been there all 50 years?
Nope. We've been within probably a mile of that location throughout our whole career. We were at 20th Street in Osborne, which is about a half a mile from where we're at now. And then we moved up to 16th in Missouri. We were there for about 6-7 years, and then we moved down to the shop that we're at now, in about 85, 86.
And that's at 16th Street south of Indian School. How many blocks?
It's about 3 blocks south of Indian School Road, okay, on the west side of the street.
Okay. I know your dad from back then. I started in the gas station business pumping gas in 1968. Then that was during the year of the Surface Station Dealers Association.
Yep.
And there was some guys there that were rather rambunctious.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a lot of Bill Bridwell,
yep.
Harry Martin, Jim Winters. Can you name any of your dad wasn't. Your dad wasn't the rambunctious one, but there was plenty of guys, and it was an association that dealt with the gasoline manufacturers.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it was a good group. It really was a good group of guys, but I don't know. I think all those service station dealer guys were a little bit rambunctious back in the day.
I think they were forced to.
Yeah, I
they
think
were
so.
Forced to.
I think so.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I was a part of that in 79, and that's when they first came out with the SMI units, Mobile did, and that was Service Station Managers Incorporated. So they would hire managers to run the gas stations, and I was the first one in Phoenix, in the Phoenix area. The rules and regulations that I had to follow were 10 times worse than your dad and the rest of them had to follow, because they had a lease, and they rented and leased, but they were their own bosses. I actually worked for Mobil Oil. My wife and I managed the facility, but we got to use the base. So it was kind of that kind of a trade-off. So they paid for all the employees, but we still had weird stuff. I mean, if somebody from out of town was going to drive by our gas stations, we better have our islands painted.
Oh, yeah.
How many times did you paint islands?
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. They would have the reps drive by, and they would come in, and that's the first thing they'd look at is those islands, and the curbs better be painted, mm-hmm. and... Oh yeah, it was, they wanted an image, and which was, you know, I understood that. I get it, but I think sometimes it was a little crazy. But yeah, the curbs were a big deal.
Okay, folks, what we're talking about is there's about a 4-inch curb around the gas pumps, and then there's a half round metal band all on the top of that curb. So when you hit it with your tires, you don't cut the tire up, you just kind of slide along the metal. Next time you go to the gas station, you'll know exactly what we're talking about. Well, we had to paint the bottom portion of the curb white, and then the top half had to be black, and it had to be perfect. Now, it was no problem cut painting the top black because that's where all the tires hit.
Right. It was already absolutely black. Yeah.
But the bottom, the white, that was what we had to get on our hand. It's not hands in these stuff. We had to paint that.
I remember the worst part about it was the skateboarders. If they would go on and they would try to jump on that thing, they would end up chipping the paint off and we'd have to go repaint it again. But that was the worst part about it. But like you said, where the tires would rub up against there, it was black anyway, so it really didn't matter that much.
If that's happened. But we still had people, and it was once a year, that would hop the island and take out a pump or whatever, or, you know, knock something down. In the days of you and me and your dad, we had windshield washing towels and squeegees.
Yep.
And actually, when I first started, we had sponges, and we went to the squeegees later.
Yeah.
And we had a self-serve island and a full-serve island.
Yeah. I remember the spray bottles. In the very beginning, there was spray bottles and the sponges, and you used to do it that way, and then the squeegees came along, and that was great because, you know, short people could reach across the windshield and clean the windshield. And it was, you know, we still, to tell you the truth, we still got one of the old island towel racks where it used to go on the pole and you'd slide it down, and then on the bottom that there would be the paper towels would come out the bottom. And then we also had another deal where the bucket was right there. It was mounted to the pole too, and the squeegee would be right in there. And it was a really good setup, and it was great. People loved it because they got their windshield washed. And in today's world, you know, everybody's doing everything themselves, so you don't get that anymore.
Well, and then I was up in Payson the other day when it was 0 degrees. I woke up and it was zero, and I was going to go fill up my truck and head to Phoenix. So when I got there, I noticed all the buckets had like an inch of ice on them, and the squeegees were inside.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You had no chance of getting anything. So fast forward a couple of days later, I stopped by, and ironically enough, I'm filling up my truck because I've been driving all over. And a guy walks outside with a cart, and he walks over, and all the squeegees are absolutely destroyed.
Oh.
Just destroyed. Now, I'm at a place that has multiple islands, so he's replacing all the squeegees. The problem is the water inside the tank hadn't been changed since Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
So it was like mud. And so you'd have thought that maybe we'd have dumped the water out and put new... Now, remember, we used to put water, and then we'd put the blue washer fluid in there.
Yeah.
And then there was customers... And 99% of the customers that came in was very appreciative when you washed their windows.
Absolutely.
But there was always that 1% that would point at the windshield at the bugs.
Yep.
And the line of the squeegee. You'd sit there and polish that windshield until you had a birthday.
And that
was what it was. You also remember in the old days, as we got new gas station people, when I started when I was like 16, do you remember how you opened the gas door on a 57 Chevy?
It was in the license plate, wasn't it?
No.
Oh, it was in the taillight.
Yeah.
It was in the taillight. Okay,
it was a switch.
Okay, yeah.
Part of the taillight was a vertical piece of chrome.
Right, yeah.
And you had to turn it to open up the door to get... Well, that was all the rookies. So as soon as the 57 Chevy pulled in, hey, Pat, come here, get that car. And he'd struggle. He'd look underneath it. The smart guys would look underneath it and follow the filler neck off of the tank.
Right.
But they still couldn't find it.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And there was all kinds of cars like that had the filler neck, and it was just a matter of a rite of passage.
Oh, yeah, and you know, the older technicians used to make, because I started working at my dad's shop when I was 10 years old. You know, we started pulling weeds and sweeping the parking lot and cleaning the bathrooms, and then we worked our way up to pumping gas. And it used to be funny because the technicians, they were all, you know, older, and they've been around a while, and they used to make fun of us, and they used to go out there and, you know, they'd tell us to do that, tell us to put spark plugs in a diesel, or, you know, tell you to put a radiator in a VW bug. You know, I mean, just crazy stuff. And so, yeah, some of that stuff, we had to learn really fast how to find this stuff because they were just having too much fun with us.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember in one of the bays we had a pit, and it had a metal cover on it with holes in it, and inside the pit was the sand water separator, and that's where we separated oil and water and stuff. Then we'd have to have those pumped out every once in a while. So this truck would come in and suck all this stuff out. Well, you remember what floats on water? Gas is heavier or...
Well, oil floats on water.
And gasoline to some extent.
Right, right.
As well. So Louis, who was absolutely a wonderful guy, Louis's laying on his back doing a clutch on a car, on a truck. And he's not on a creeper, so he's not on the roll around roller skate that people would know what a creeper, if they don't know what a creeper is. So he's underneath this truck pulling the clutch out, and he lights a cigarette, and he takes the match and drops it in the hole, which promptly blows the hole up. And the metal plate comes up with his creeper and him on it and smashes him to the bottom of the truck. And then he falls down. Now, the plate doesn't land perfectly because it came out, and now it's discombobulated. So the plate goes to the side. Louis comes down, and he goes, an arm's length into the pit. And I'll remember that to this day. All of us learned that particular, smoking back then was no big deal. We all learned that pit and the explosion associated with that was an attention getter. And it was oftentimes you just run away. Another story about Louis. I love this guy. He was just as ornery. He's taught me how to be ornery. He's out there sticking the tanks. You remember sticking the tanks?
Yep. Did that too.
And you got this long wooden ruler and it was square. And we didn't know it back then, but we'd drop it in the tank. Mm-hmm. We'd just drop it into the tank, and then we'd pull it up, and it'd say 61 inches, and we'd write 61 inches. That would tell our dads or our bosses how many gallons we closed with, because 61 inches. Well, we didn't know it at the time, but when we dropped it down in there, we'd poke holes in the bottom of the tank, and that was causing the gasoline contamination. And we just didn't know that.
Yeah.
And we just and the stick was how long? 20 feet long?
Oh, easy.
Easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just stick it in the thing, and you let it go, boom, it'd go down. Sometimes if it went boom and bounced back up, you'd still get a good mark.
Yeah.
But anyway, you'd do it until you had 2 feet above the ground, and then you'd drop it and pull it out back out. So we know today that in the 60s and 70s, we caused many of our own problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing of it is that was one of the things my dad used to really get ticked off at any of us that would do that. He kind of somehow he knew that was a bad idea, so he would tell all the guys, we don't drop it down in there. You put it down in there, one hand over the other, all the way down to the bottom, let it touch the bottom, and then pull it up, because he didn't want that problem. Maybe he had learned it from some of the older guys that have been around a long time that have told him that, hey, that's not a good idea, don't do that.
He was one of the older guys. Yeah. But I think I'll tell you the difference. Didn't your dad and his dad own the property where the gas station was at?
No, the original property that we were at 16th and Osborne, it was a Chevron.
Okay.
And he leased that property. And then when Chevron found out he was making a lot of money, or making some money, I should say, and then they raised his rent to where, mm-hmm. I mean, it didn't make any sense for him to pay him rent anymore. So he bought the property at 16th Missouri it was on the northwest corner. Now it's an office building. Mm-hmm. And, so he bought that, and then we had a little car wash next door, kind of like the setup you have mm-hmm. here with a self-serve car wash. And,
okay. So. Wait, did he have a gas station at that point?
Yes.
Was it a Texaco then?
Texaco.
Okay. It made a difference on whose ground it was at.
Oh.
You see what I mean?
Oh,
But your dad maybe had been part of the old timers, which is the 60s and 70s when they were pulling tanks because we were contaminating, and it happened to be that wherever the hole was, right below it, was all these puncture marks.
Yeah.
So your dad may have been especially attentive to that because of the contamination we caused. 602-508-0960. You got a car question. Both of us together, how many years have you been in the auto repair industry?
About 46 years.
Okay, 40 for me. 79 when I started in the gas. No, 68, but I'm not counting that because I was a gas pump jockey. But 79 is when I owned my own shop. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Dave Martin from Martin's Auto, 16th Street south of Indian School, is sitting here next to me. Dave, we've got a couple of callers, and we're going to take ladies first. Linda's first, Huck's is second, and then we have three open lines available, 602-508-0960. Linda, you're first.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
First-time listener. I have a Toyota Camry XLE V6 2001. It's only got 100,000 miles on it. Inherited it from my mother-in-law.
Okay.
And it lurches between first and second, usually. It's an automatic, but you can feel it. And sometimes it's worse than others. And everybody says there's nothing wrong with the car.
Okay.
No one can tell me what's wrong with the car.
Okay.
But we know there's something. I mean, it doesn't seem to, it's only usually in those early gears, and as you're accelerating, not, well, although does it decelerating too.
Okay, let us ask some questions, because that's what's missing in this equation. Dave and I aren't going to be able to diagnose it. Well, we got a 10-25% chance of diagnosing it. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Does it change hot or cold?
No.
Okay, good. Yeah, there's three answers, and the women are the best. Yes, no, or I don't know. We never hear an I don't know from a guy.
Yeah.
Okay? So it, when it happens, it doesn't happen in any other gear. It's just the first gear, and then when it shifts to second, it goes away.
Yes, sometimes in a higher gear, but that's when I notice it the most, mostly, I guess, because it's a jerk.
Okay.
And you can feel the change.
Okay. Is it kind of a lurching sensation, on, off, on, off, on, off? Some kind of a problem where you're going along and it goes, da, 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 something like
nope.
that?
Nope.
Okay.
It just, you're accelerating and you go from first to second or second down to first. I'm assuming, you know, it's an automatic, so I'm just speaking in general. And the lower, I'm probably only going.
Okay.
Feel the, it's like there's a chain missing or a chink missing. It just drops.
Okay.
And
can
you
duplicate
you
it
like
every time?
Can I do what?
Duplicate it all the time?
No.
I mean, you can't make it happen?
Is it consistent?
No, I can't make it happen. No.
Dave's right. Is it a consistent? My question is why hasn't anybody ridden with you if you can demonstrate the problem?
Well, even if I can demonstrate the problem, nobody seems to be able to figure out what's causing the problem.
Okay, well, you're at the wrong shop then.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're at the wrong shop. This is... Come on, you, Dave,
yeah.
You got a lady who can make it happen.
Right.
She's had it to shops and nobody can find it, but yet nobody says, hey, lady, take me for a ride and show me what it is.
That's the first thing I would do.
Yeah. What part of town are you in?
I'm down here in Queen Creek.
Okay. I'll make you a deal. I don't have anybody in that area that's on my best car repair shops list. I'm at I-10 in Warner. You know where IKEA's at?
Yes.
Okay, just east of there, about a half a mile. Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are out of the question, because for obvious reasons. But if you'll come by Salem Boys and ask for Alan or Andy, those are my kids, and tell them,
okay,
this is how you get people's backup. You say, I've got a problem. Nobody can find it. Nobody can fix it. That's kind of like waving the red flag in front of the bull.
Okay.
And I can make it happen all the time. If you'll just give me somebody to go with me, then I would really like it, because I can demonstrate it. Then the next question is I'm prepared to wait for a while in the lobby if you want to. You check it out. Or I'll bring it back and leave it. And that's what happens. So, have you got a pencil handy?
I do.
480-598-1234. Ask for Alan or Andy. We'll test drive it for you for free. We'll give you 15 to 30 minutes of our undivided time. But I'm quite sure that they'll know whether it's in the ignition system, the fuel system, the transmission system, the motor mount, like you said, motor mount. It's going to be easy once we drive it and once you're with us. That's the easy part. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do. We won't charge you a dime, okay?
Hey, that sounds great. Yeah, okay. I guess what I really want to know is if it's dangerous or if it's important.
Awesome.
Or if it's just the cork of the car.
Well, we won't know till we find out what it is, because then you use that word "it." You know, is it dangerous?
Thank you so much.
And it'll be easy for us to determine. But I can tell you this much: if it was something serious, it probably would have got worse, and it probably would have already created consequences. Hux, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hey, thanks. I really enjoy your show most Saturday mornings. We have a motorhome with a Ford V10 in it, and I bought the oil to change the oil. And I got 5W30, and then I noticed the cap says 5W20. Is that going to do anything harmful to the engine?
No, I don't think so.
I think this. First of all, it's not going to hurt you at all.
Yeah.
It's not going to hurt you at all. But we can tell that his motorhome is 3, 4 years old, 5 years old.
Right.
And
it's about 4.
Okay. All right. The reason why is the oil cap, the thing on the oil cap has been about 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It started.
Yeah.
And so we now look at the oil cap. A 520 flows like a 5-weight when it's cold, and it protects like a 20-weight when it's hot, and you'll get the better fuel economy, you'll get better lubrication, better protection, and better temperature protection. So the oil's not going to turn to peanut butter when you're up in Montana in the wintertime. So my answer to you is, and I'm an expert in oil. I've been trained by Valvoline and Chevron, and I've testified in court about oil. I promise you, you're not going to hurt anything. But that oil's got about, 7,500 to 10,000 mile oil change, or once a year.
Probably.
Because it's a sin.
Yeah.
It's going to be a synthetic.
It's full synthetic, yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to change it once a year, and probably in April, my suggestion. And you can go 7,500 to 10,000 miles on that with no problem. That doesn't mean you can't, you have to still check your oil, but that doesn't mean you're just going to drive it without opening the hood.
Yeah.
But have no fear.
I change it every 5,000.
Okay, well, then you're wasting your money because...
I think it's a blend. You know, it's Ford...
It's a blend.
Okay, if it's a blend, it's still $7,500. Let me give you the conventional, which is what we had in the 50s, 60s, and we still have today. We don't have a 520, first of all. It was a 1030, and it was 3,000 miles. 3 to 5,000 on conventional, 5,000 to 7,500 on a blend, and 8,000 to 12,000 or more on the synthetic. Those are the oil change intervals that match the quality and the kind of oil you have. So if it's a blend, you're still at 5,000 to 7,500. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Dave Martin from Martin's Auto, 16th Street and Indian School. My name's Mark Salem. I'm here every Saturday talking about cars and car repairs. And we're going to go, first of all, I got to talk about Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Folks, when I have a geographical problem, just like Dave at Martin's Auto, I call a local shop and I say, this is what we got. Here's the customer's number, or the customer's going to come in, and I don't ask for a discount. I don't tell you to do it for free. None of that happens. The issue is I'm guiding you to a shop. All of my shops have made me a hero, but Harker's did not too long ago, involving a BMW and water in the evaporator case. The estimate, I think, had been $1,500 to $2,500, and I think their bill was $75 to open the drain and drain the water on it. So Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School, been around since 1967, and you can't go wrong if you live in that geographical area, and if you've got a car that every time you open the door, there's a barking noise underneath the trunk, then Harker's would be a good guy because they're really good in diagnosis, but so would other shops in your area. Dan, good morning.
Yeah, Mark, Dave.
Dave, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's Dan.
It's Dan.
Mark and Dave, here's my question. I had a new battery put in my vehicle, and they disconnected it, and then they reconnect, you know, put it all in, and it reset everything. Does that really reset the computer and the emissions at the same time? Kills it to zero? Starts over?
It starts all over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No matter what, once you disconnect the battery, everything starts over.
All the monitors need to be run again.
Yeah. And the monitors, the computer... And if you're talking about emissions, and are you talking about emissions?
No, I'm just talking about, in general, when the battery's disconnected and you put a new battery in, it resets everything, the computer, the trip odometer, the radio.
Everything.
Everything.
Yeah. Everything, yeah. Now, Dave, I think I read not too long ago that there's this thing you put in a cigarette lighter.
Yeah.
And I think it has a 9-volt battery or something.
Yeah.
And you plug it into the cigarette lighter, and then you swap your battery, and it maintains the seat controls, the steering controls, the radios, and stuff like that. Do you use that?
Yeah, and it's actually a lot of jump boxes, vehicles that where you can jump start a car. It's a battery pack.
Uh-huh.
They have that exactly where you you plug something into, it's a cigarette lighter, plugs in the cigarette lighter, and you do it live. You change the battery live is what you're doing.
Okay. So, but what he means by live is we got the car, for all intents and purposes, the key is on.
Yeah.
And, so we're going to actually change the battery. It's kind of like changing the heart of the electrical system when it's running.
Right, exactly.
Dan, you're absolutely right. That becomes a big problem sometimes. For people that don't recognize that that's going to happen and that we didn't tell them that's going to happen.
Well, and the worst one is the ones with the radio where you got to punch in a code in order to get the radio to work again. And the customer doesn't have the code.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to scramble to try to figure out how to get that code because now the radio doesn't work and, you know, nobody's going to be happy about that. So.
You're right. And we tell customers if you get the code, write it on the inside cover of the owner's manual because no one's going to care. And how many times have you had anything criminal or even civil involving that stupid code?
No.
Never.
Never.
Never. The whole idea was to put a code in there so if somebody stole your radio that nobody could use it.
Yeah.
How many times in the last 5 years, how many times in the last 10 years have you had somebody drive in with a car and had the dashboard apart and the only thing that was taken was the radio?
Okay, so I gotta say, this happened once in the last 10 years. I had a car that...
Wait a minute, what year?
It was a newer. No, it was an older car. It was an older car and it was an older radio and they could use it. But I mean, who steals radios anymore? You can go to a pawn shop and buy them for $1. I mean, who wants to steal radios? I mean, come on.
So the answer to your question, Dan, is that's what happens. And most of the times we try to write down the radios. We write down your radio stations. We can't duplicate your seat controls and all that other kind of stuff, but it is something that happens that the fix is going to take another 15 or 20 minutes. So that's the difficult part is who pays for that extra 15 or 20 minutes. It's kind of like washing the windshield in the old days on the car when I got gas. It's just
okay,
kind of.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All righty, good luck to you, Dan. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We were talking before to Linda with respect to the Toyota Camry and having problems and stuff like that, and you and I were talking off air.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem like a tough one. On a 1 to 10 scale, the diagnostic on that would typically be less than?
Oh, less than a 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah.
And then to extrapolate that to money, it's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of $30 to $60, unless you can identify it right off the bat.
Right, absolutely. And if I could strap one of my technicians under the car while I drive it, that would be even better. But they say they don't get paid enough for that.
And that is a problem. That is a problem. Speed bumps are a real big problem with respect to that. So, yeah. And you're right. We had a vibration not too long ago, and nobody could find out which it was. I was proud because my son Alan said, give me 4 guys.
Yeah.
So he goes out and gets 4 clean guys. Everybody's wrapped up in fender covers and stuff like that. They put 4 guys in there. They drive the car. There's a vibration. So then they all switch places, and they all agree it's in the right rear. So now we're home free. Now, can I charge a 20-minute times 4 guys?
No.
What's that? 2 hours or something like that? No, I can't. Yeah. But it sure speeds up the process, and it makes the shop look like a hero. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Those are the things that separate you from a lot of the other shops. Is you want
when you say this, you a good you know, shop,
a
not
good shop,
me?
Yeah, no, a good, right, a good shop. Absolutely. That takes the extra time to handle it. You're a hero. Customer loves it because they got an annoying problem solved, and it's just annoying. A lot of times, and they're worried about the safety. But also it's a little vibration or a little noise just drive people crazy. So when you can get rid of that for them, man, you are a hero.
Now we're going to take a break in just a minute. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. If you have a car question or comment, 602-508-0960. We now have, and I saw this the other day, they have transmitters with magnets. And you put the transmitters on the 4 corners of the car. Now, it still takes 2 because one guy drives it to make it happen, and the other guy has got headphones on, and he's turning on and off these vibration sensors, and he goes, okay, it's in the left front.
Yeah.
And then at least we can focus on that. But when I said you, I wanted to make sure that you weren't looking at me.
Right. No,
I
get
it. The whole industry,
absolutely.
And I would say certainly... 75 to 80% of the industry in Phoenix is looking out after the customer's best interest and not their own, which would mean that 25 to 20 to 25%, perhaps are not necessary. The customer's needs are not necessarily in front of their own. 602-508-0960. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Dave Martin from Martin's Auto, 16th Street south of Indian School, is flying with me today. And if you're interested in talking to him and you live in that geographical area, he's a good shop. It's one that I can stamp it with the approval of me and all my industry. And so we know the good guys, and I'm here to point them out. Action Auto Repair is another one. I-17 in Deer Valley, been around since 1983. I remember Tom when he was selling engine analyzers. Everybody would come in and say, put the car on the scope. Well, he sold those engine analyzers back then. And folks, I got to tell you, I paid more for my first engine analyzer, the scope, than I did my first house. And they were very expensive. They didn't tell us what was wrong with your car unless you could read the data. So you had to be able to know what the data was. So if your CO, carbon monoxide coming out of the tailpipe, was at 10.7, you had to know what that meant. And really, you wanted something that was 2.5, $2.50. You didn't want $10.50. So that's what Action Auto is all about. I-17 in Deer Valley at the northwest corner. Lance, you're up next.
Yeah, hi. I just heard your caller about oil. I have a 2020 Mazda CX-5, and I was interested on, would that those oil ranges be the same?
With respect to, give me an example. Are you talking about
if it's synthetic, right, that, you know, the mileage, you know, you said synthetic could be between 75 to 10,000 miles before change.
They're all the same. If you're using synthetic oil in your car and it calls for synthetic oil, then you're not supposed to change it. 75 is, I don't know that they would all agree with that. I'm given that number. It's easier for me to regurgitate, but some of the newer model cars on the synthetics are calling for 25,000 miles. I'm real uncomfortable with that. I'm not doing
that. Agreed.
And so I know that Chevron, and I know that Valvoline and many of the rest of them talk about 10 to 12, but there's a lot of cars out there that are 15, although the owner's manuals on virtually all of them doesn't go north of 15. Here's what you do, Dave. You got some lady like us that lives on Ahwatukee. She drives 2,000 miles a year, and she calls for a synthetic. What do you do?
Well, you at least got to look over the vehicle once a year. I mean, that's the most important part. The thing of it is spreading out these intervals that we see is that if you spread out, if the customer's not driving very much, let's say, and you spread it out to 10,000 miles, and you don't get to look over that car for a couple of years, things may go awry.
The couple of years I'll agree with.
Yeah.
The 10,000 I won't.
Yeah.
Because the 10,000, so many people are putting that on pretty quick. I agree with everything you said. But by the same token, the 70s and 80s cars that we grew up in,
yeah,
they would break all the time with 2,000 or 3,000 miles. The newer model cars, we've got customers that haven't. I'll give you an example. Renee's car. I can't tell you what kind it is, but it starts with F, and I don't do F commercials, okay? And it ain't a Fiat either. She's got 120,000 miles on it, and all we've put on is tires. That's it, just tires. And we've changed the oil on a regular basis, so that's four times around the equator. And so, yes, there's – but to answer your question, Lance, how many miles a year do you drive?
15, 18.
Okay, then synthetic is perfect for you. Now, here's the question. When are you going to change it, and what's the benefit? Is it January through December? Pick one.
December.
Okay. I would suggest if you were my customer, you do it just before summer, because summer's the worst season we have in Arizona, Phoenix, and I'd like you to go through summer with fresh oil. So I'd like to bring you in every April and change your oil. That's my personal opinion, and that's what we do on our fleet of vehicles, is we do them all. Now, the lady in Ahwatukee that I was talking about with 2,000 miles, I may very well change her to a blend and bring her in anyway.
Right.
I agree with you.
Right.
It's not good for us to go years without checking the tires, the fluids, the belts, and the hoses, and any obvious things that are wrong. I agree with that.
Yeah.
So, Lance, did that help you?
Very much so. I guess what – is there really an advantage between the blend and the synthetic, just besides the mileage?
Well,
the cost is different.
Let me talk technical with you, okay? Oxidation is when the oil turns to a tar. Okay? Mm-hmm. When you get to where you're turning it from a liquid lubricant to a carbon tar, you're dead. This is it. That motor's going to heaven. So, and then freeze point, it's called the pour point. When it pours out of the can at 60, it offers more protection than if it can't pour out of the can at 15. Okay? Mm-hmm. So there's a big difference there. And that's exactly. Conventional oil will pour out of the can at maybe 20, and maybe it'll protect you to 300. Semi-synthetics will move your, on the cold side to 40 below. But on the other side, it might be 350. And I'll answer it. Then on the synthetic, at 60 degrees below zero, it flows out of the can, and it protects you to 500 degrees. But Dave and I were just talking off the air. Your motor's toast after 300 degrees. And so, you know, remember the mobile, Dave, the oil pan? They had a frying pan on a stove, and they had mobile oil, and they had a thermometer on it, and they go 500 degrees.
I remember that.
And that was silly because your motor will never make it that far. So those are my thoughts, and those are the specifications of the oil. Frankly, 15 below zero from a conventional oil handles Phoenix. And if it's going to go to 300 degrees or 250 or 300, it's going to handle the heat. So those are your choices. All righty?
Very good. Appreciate it. Have a good
day. You betcha. Thank you. What's the number one reason that the cars come in with the motor trashed?
Overheating.
That bingo. I would have said the same thing.
Yeah, overheating.
And it's all. What is the verbiage that you hear from the customer as not an excuse? I don't mean that.
Yeah.
As the story behind.
Oh, they were driving down the road, and then all of a sudden there was steam, and they pulled over right away. But when you talk to them more, obviously, and you know, if you're driving down any freeway in town here, you want to get to a safe place. Obviously, people are scared, and I get that. And by the time people let you over to get off of the freeway or get off of there, it's most of the time it's too late. Mm-hmm. It's just too far.
And what I hear is, yeah, I saw the needle getting in the red, and I was only a mile and a half from home. That's what we hear.
Well,
it's the last mile and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people, I'll ask them, did the needle go to H? And they'll say, I never looked.
Well, and you're right, but let's talk about the 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Okay? You're driving down the road, and now temperature normally is a half to three quarter on the newer model cars from 1990 north. We want middle to three quarter because middle is at 220.
Right.
And so we want it to definitely run at the middle. Anything colder is bad for the engine. So and let's do the science. When does water boil, Dave?
300 or...
I don't know. Now you just, hey, Gil, when does water boil?
Isn't it like a 212?
212. Okay. Yeah, that's okay. Right. That's right. So water boils at 212. We put 50-50 coolant in it, and we move it to about 300. So it turns to a vapor at 300 because we're going to turn it from a liquid to a vapor. So when you drive down the road, we want it to run half to three quarters. So it's kind of like when we get to the hot mark, I think it starts pinging.
Yeah.
Shortly after that, we're going to blow up something in the engine, usually a hose.
Yeah.
And when that happens, what happens? How does the driver know that there's a big, substantial coolant leak underneath the hood?
Steam.
Out the windshield.
Yeah.
It just covers the windshield.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
And at that time, they got a 50-50 chance of that being okay.
Well, when it builds up so much pressure in the system, too, you know, it used to be the hoses that blow. Mm-hmm. Now it's the radiator because it's got a plastic tank on it.
Yeah, you're right. One way or another, though, we got that 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I'm going to add something else. One, the gauge is in an area it shouldn't be. Two, we start rattling like a ping.
Yeah.
And three, we end up with a gauge that's pegged. And number four, we have an explosion of water underneath the hood.
And then
would that fair?
Yeah. And then the smell when it comes in, when it's towed into the shop, then you take the radiator cap off and you smell it. You're like, oh, this is bad.
No sense in even checking this motor. It's toast.
This is toast.
Who we got, Gil?
We have Sam.
Sam, good morning.
Morning. How are you doing?
We're good. Both of us are good.
They do.
Good, good. I've got a couple of questions. A 65 Chevy El Camino. Backing plate, there's little grooves where the shoes rest on them. What is the usual procedure for repairing that if you can't find new ones?
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah, that's easy.
That's easy. All right. First of all, you get a cutting torch and you cut them out. And then you put new ones in. Is that right, Dave? Is that what you do?
That's not it. That's not it. That's way more work than I want to do.
Yeah,
what's
me
the
too.
Answer? What's the answer?
We just weld it.
Oh, you grind them.
Yeah, grind it.
Just grind them off.
Yeah, grind them off. But I mean, if they're too bad, what we've done in the past is put a bead on there and then grind it down smooth, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, it's no problem. Now, you might not find those for a 70 El Camino, but once you get the part number, then you can get in to different parts departments that you may not have access to, but we can.
Right.
And you find out that that backing plate is from a 70 El Camino all the way to a 78 half-ton pickup. And so it's the same part number. Now, I'm with Dave. Of all those, how many, of all of the years you've been in this business, north of 50?
Yeah.
How many backing plates have you replaced because of a wear problem on the pads?
Oh, I don't even, maybe, if it was that bad, and maybe rust was involved in it or something, maybe 5 in 50 years.
Yeah.
Of that. I mean, it's not
same
not
same with me.
Yeah, now, is it something
ahead.
I could just take like a little disc grinder while it's still on there and just cut the groove off or smooth it out without
that's
building
what we do.
It up?
Yeah, that's what we do.
Okay.
And then wait a minute, you want to paint it so it doesn't rust.
So, okay, after you do that. Yeah,
a little flat black or a little gloss black, whatever, and let it dry. Yeah, that's all we do.
All right, and another question about the shoes that are saturated with brake fluid because the wheel cylinder was bad. Can you use brake cleaner? What is that stuff? Like
Dave,
gum out or brake
cleaner? Why are you shaking your head, Dave?
You can put brake cleaner on there, but there's a 50-50 shot that you're going to end up using those shoes again. I would say probably replace the shoes.
Well, I'm going to take the old guy's position. Brake fluid is water soluble.
Yeah.
And there's nothing on that shoe that's going to melt with water.
Right.
So in the old days, we'd take the shoes off and we'd put them in a bucket of water and just let them sit there, maybe change the water once or twice in 24 hours, and then we'd put them on. I agree with you. The problem is brake chatter.
Yeah.
And brake fluid necessarily isn't going to be cleaned off of the pad with brake cleaner, but it will do the surface stuff. But we could still, depending on how long they're saturated. There's three answers. Soak them in water. Like Dave said, you can try brake clean, or you need to replace them. Those are the three options you got.
Okay. And, one more question. Concerning C-clips on an axle, would you replace them if you were in there, or would you use the old ones?
I think I'd look at the C-clips. He's talking about,
yeah,
folks, the axles slide into the differential from the outside. And once they
right.
get inside, there's this, wait a minute, I'm telling everybody else, because you and I know, these little horseshoe clips that hold the axle from sliding out when you're driving down the road, and all of a sudden the left rear tire's out about 3 feet. So the answer is if the C-clips don't show any abnormal wear, we would use the C-clips that
they're shiny just from wear, but they mic out at 150. They're supposed to be 150. They're 149, 5 to 150.
Okay.
And they got no burrs on them. They're smooth. So
yeah,
reused them.
Yeah. I mean, you've done all the homework. That's what, I don't know where he got the spec for that, but I'm not quite sure, but I wouldn't argue. It's polished. He's talking about them being polished, and that's what we expect. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. It's 58 minutes after the hour. We're going to come back in 5 minutes, four and a half or five. How many minutes, Gil, do you know? 4.5 minutes. See, I was close. This 40 years of radio has done good for me. So if you call now, 602-508-0960, you might have to wait 4 minutes now, because Mark's just taken 30 seconds of time. And we'll get you in as quickly as we can, and we have another hour as well. So tell us what year, make, and model that you have of your car, and let's talk about symptoms. What's counterproductive is for you to tell us that you've got a check engine light and you've been on Google. Because that's not the process we want to deal with over the front counter. We want to ask questions. And if you have the code, that's fine. But the code doesn't tell you what's wrong with the car. Everybody wants you to believe that, but it ain't true. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to go till 12 o'clock. We've got some callers, but we've got two lines open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And you're welcome to join us. I've got Dave here from Martin's Auto. Dave Martin from Martin's Auto, 16th Street, south of Indian School. Been around since, I think you were around, your dad was around when we still had wooden tires, if I'm not mistaken.
They called them blacksmiths back then, Mark.
Oh, that's exactly right. You know you've had that conversation with your dad. That's exactly right. So anyway, let me tell you about a really good shop. Automotive Dynamics is the only place in Sun City that I can recommend you. That doesn't mean there's other fine shops, but he has taken the time to go through Mark Salem's filter. And, of course, we check everything about them, including insurance and stuff like that. So Chuck and his son Derek's been around since 1982. Auto Dynamics, they're on the north side of Grand, west of 99th Avenue. And if you're in Sun City and you want Mark Salem's best shop, then Automotive Dynamics. Dottie, you're first.
Hi, thank you.
You bet.
Let me turn off my radio. Okay. Your last hour, you had discussed oil converting from one oil to another.
Uh-huh.
Now, what I'm concerned about is I have a 71 classic VW bug.
Okay.
My mechanic did convert. We used to use 40, straight 40 weight, no 20, 40, or 30, 40, 20. It was straight 40 weight. He converted to, I'm looking at my paperwork, 2050.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Well, let's ask Dave. Dave, I didn't see you. I had my back to you, so take it first. I'll take it second.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's a problem. Back then, 2050 was a real popular oil, and 40 weight was, I know in the VWs it was 40 weight, that they were just straight, there was just a straight weight.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about 2050. It flows like a 20 weight when it's cold and flows like a 50 weight when it's hot. We need 150 weight for a VW. They leak oil, they burn oil, and they wear out, and you can't hear the knock for the exhaust. So to answer your question bluntly, I think he did you better. I think the 2050 is an ideal oil. Now think about this. He took you from, it flows like a 30 weight. Now I want you to think of peanut butter, pancake syrup, chocolate milk, and frosting. All right.
Okay.
So the real thin stuff, the water, is a 10 weight or a 5 weight. And then frosting and peanut butter is the 40 and 50 weight. So while it doesn't change viscosity like water to frosting, it doesn't change. You'll notice I'm real careful. It flows like a 10 weight would when it's cold and flows like a 50 weight when it's hot. How much oil do you add between oil changes?
Oh, maybe one quart. It's not something you drive too much in the summer, but I'm not supposed to.
Okay.
Because I'm hard on a car, and I was used to a turbo, and
okay.
I seem to treat this like it's, you know, a hot turbo car, but it's not.
Hey.
My point is, now, probably one quart in between oil changes. Now, I recently put on a new air filter.
Okay.
Because it was all plugged with oil, and I do believe the oil does tend to leak in that vehicle.
Okay.
So, why is it plugging up now? I have a brand new one. It looks like it's doing the same thing. And this is a very credible mechanic.
Okay.
He does specialties.
That's fine. You got a comment on this?
So the air filter is getting oil in it? Is that what she's saying?
Yeah.
Blow-by?
It has to be blow-by.
Yeah, just blow-by.
Here's what's going on. The motor has internal compression leaks. So we're leaking air and exhaust through the rings, which is a very common problem for BWs. Now, we vent the engine into the air filter area. So otherwise, any pressure, which might be 1 or 2 pounds of pressure, is then recycled into the air filter to be used again by the engine. So what you have is you've got some oil that's coming into the air filter, which is where it's supposed to go, but it's laden with oil because it's got a lot of blow-by. So did it do it when you were doing 30 weight?
40, you mean?
40.
No, it didn't.
Then go back to 40. 40 is more peanut butter, and 40 is going to be thicker, and so it's less likely to, and it's going to seal the small leak you have already a little bit better than the 2050. So my advice is go back to when it gets really bad, then you're going to put all STP in anyway.
Yeah, motor honey.
And motor honey. But for right now, because of your symptoms, my suggestion is go back to your 40. Okay?
And he did that because he thought, you know, it's very expensive, the 40. But you know what? It's worth it if it's going to work, right?
Yeah.
And then I do have like $10,000 in rebuild and maintaining the engine. I've had the car 45 years.
Yeah, but you're still dealing with Jesus Christ technology, okay? This goes back to 10 BC. The technology doesn't appear in any car today. This technology was good back in the 40s and the 50s and World War II and stuff like that. But it's far from what it is today. Now, if we were to take it apart and maybe make some minor changes, then we might be, on a 1 to 10 scale, you're a 1, we might be able to bring you to a 3. But we sure as heck aren't going to bring you to a brand new Cadillac or a brand new Mercedes or a brand new Buick or a brand new, well, I can't say Ford.
Right.
But I'm teasing you. Okay, I got to move on, Dottie. Thank you. Jack, you're up next.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I listened to your show last week, and I tried to call last week, but I didn't get through, and I just had a couple of questions.
Sure.
On things that you said you were an expert on.
Okay.
The warranties. I have I had an 11, and now I have a 2018 Chevy Volt, which is a pretty complex vehicle, and I'm very happy with it. What would you recommend on an extended warranty? Because I don't think a lot of mechanics want to touch that vehicle.
Dave, this conversation was about aftermarket warranties. And my panties were wadded up, and my underwear was wadded up. I wear both underwear and panties, by the way. And I hate them, and I don't like them, and I don't recommend them in any condition. But let me comment first. Your Chevy Volt is a long way away from the technology we have in 2012. So there really isn't anything that we're going to be able to, or that we're not going to be able to deal with on your Chevy Volt, with the exception of one thing. That's if we buy a new PCM, a new computer, most of the time we have to send it to the dealer, give them the VIN number, and they can reprogram it. So, let me ask Dave a question. How many computers do you pull and have to replace and reprogram annually?
It's very, very few. Maybe on one hand, if that.
Okay, we're one or two a year.
Yeah.
And if there's more, it's because somebody messed up. Right. They started the car backwards, or they created some, or they
water or something, you know.
And they put in a new stereo system, and they hooked up the power to the wrong wire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So the answer is you can do what you want, but last week I said that the cost of that is more than the repairs. Number two, they always hijack the repair. They want to send us parts, inferior parts. They want us to warranty the parts, and they won't pay shop supplies, environmental charges, or anything like that, or refrigerant. And they hassle the heck out of us to reduce our prices, to buy a cheaper part, let them ship, and your car sits here for days until they send some part that looks like it was taken off a used car and painted. So I don't like to deal with them. They won't give you a credit card for a week after the car has been paid. And I just don't like them. And really and truly, if it was really a great thing for everybody and they paid their bills like they're supposed to, I would support them. But yeah, it's not.
I would agree with you on that, too. And the thing that I just really kind of chaps me a little bit is that when you go to buy a car and then they sell you that warranty and then they put it on the cost of the car, put it into the loan, and then you pay interest on top of that warranty that you just bought.
And there's no need to. What's the factory warranty on your Volt?
Well, it was 3 years, you know, the standard warranty, and it's okay. 10 years on the battery.
Okay. You know, 3 years, if you go 15,000 miles a year like you should, then 15 is what? Real quick. Two times 15 is 30. 45,000.
Yeah,
45,000, 50,000 miles.
And then sometimes the drivetrain warranties are even more than that. You know, the emissions part of it is what, 80?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot more coverage than you think there is.
Like I said, they're always fighting with us about price, but you still have sales tax, environmental charges, sales tax, and a lot of Freon. And you have some other stuff that's buried in your warranty they don't cover. So the answer is I have to, here, I'm in the middle. I hate them, but they force me to tell the customer and give the customer bad news. They won't take the customer's call, but they go, you know, Mark, I'm sorry, we're not going to cover this part. Why not? Well, she's 6.5 minutes out of warranty. Okay, well, you call her and tell her she's out of warranty by 6.5 minutes, and I'm being facetious, obviously.
Yeah, right.
Or you call her and tell her that we're going to have to wait 2 months for a part because I have it in Phoenix, but you want to bring it to me from Montreal, Canada, and you want to bring it by horseback on that kind of stuff to save, what, $50? So the answer is no. Did you have any other questions?
Yeah, you know, the warranty was 3 years, 36,000 miles, and it seems like the I've only had the car in a few times, but they've always been issues with charging the unit or rebooting the computer. And they tell you at General Motors, I got the extended warranty from General Motors, mm-hmm. and that it's only going to, you know, that they have special mechanics that went to school for Chevy Volts, you know, and they usually only have like one in a shop. That
so how does that have to do with your aftermarket warranty? You think he's going to do it any faster? I mean, those guys can't come. Boy, I'm getting on my white horse now.
Yeah.
Those guys can't come work for me.
No, but those guys are qualified to work.
Those guys can't come work for me. They can't because they're like a veterinarian that works on horses that are white. That's it. They can't fix a pig. They can't fix a donkey. They can't fix an airplane. They can't fix an internal combustion engine. They can't do lawnmowers. They can't do two-stroke blowers. Fundamentally, they have a small pipe they look through. That's all they know is the Chevy Volt. Really and truly. Jack, if you want to buy, that's okay. That's okay with me. It's pretty self-serving for them to tell you, our car is so crappy that you're going to need an aftermarket warranty after 36,000 miles. Because that's what they're saying. So I got to go before my heart blows out of my chest. Andrew, you stay right there. I'm going to calm down. The rest of you at 602-508-0960. You can tell I'm pretty adamant about this.
I think so.
The aftermarket warranties, that's like nitrogen in the air of your tires. Oh, I hate that conversation. Oh, I'm going to put nitrogen in your car. You need to come in every 3,000 miles and let me check your nitrogen. Oh, while you're here, you need hoses and belts and brakes, and your passenger side seat is sagging by 3/4 of an inch because your husband weighs too much, and we're going to have to get him in front of the airbag, and so we got to lift up the seat, and we got to buy a new seat. And your windshield has a slight optic defect in the right side corner, probably related to your husband's cigar smoking. And we'll be back in a minute.
The mechanic raised up.
While we were on break, I had to go get jumper cables to get Mark's heart started again.
Yeah, you know, I've told people, Dave and I are going to start a business, okay? What we're going to do is we are so good to our customers, our potential customers. We're going to open a company, and we're going to sell an aftermarket warranty. And you know what? If we lose money, we lose money.
Yeah.
It just we lose money. I've told people, I'll take your $4,000 and I'll cover what they do. Get a copy of the policy. I'll adhere to the policy and you're going to get screwed.
Yeah.
That's all. And folks, take the $4,000 and put it in a bank account.
That's what I tell them. We were just talking about that. That's what I tell all my customers. Just take that money, what that warranty is going to cost you, and put it in a bank account and fix your car.
And talking about somebody else who's emotional about this, and he uses bad words, but then so do I, and he's not on the radio. Blackwell Automotive is at 40th Street and Greenway. Him and I have been friends, just like you and I have been friends for many, many years. He does oil changes, engine swaps. He works on the old cars. He works on the new cars. He's really a good, solid guy. And he's the only gas shop in Northeast Scottsdale that I can recommend. There's lots up there, but listen to me carefully. He's the only one I can recommend. Maybe they haven't applied, and maybe they have. He's the only one I can recommend. Andrew, you're up next.
Okay, as a dealer mechanic, that was the funniest conversation I just heard.
You know what, Andrew?
Man,
that dude, makes
talk
my...
through a pipe.
That so, you've made my day. I'm a dealership technician. I know I'm in trouble. I know he's going to rip me apart. Go ahead. You got the floor, buddy.
No, I've been in the business since 2002. I work for Chrysler. So I'm 36 years old. I got in when I was 17. I've never been a manager. I'm hoping in the future I'll be given an opportunity to run a shop one day. I have a lot of experience now, see, at least as a dealership side of it. I'm not on the independent side of it. You guys are geniuses. We can only hope to, you know, be on the same pedestal as you guys. My question is, as shop owners, managers, did you guys monitor the guys' hours, your individual guys' hours, because they're commission-based, or did you just monitor the shop as a whole, and the whole of the shop was doing great, you were fine, but you didn't really pay attention if one guy was flagging 150 hours of pay period, another guy was only flagging 80, did you really worry about that? I just kind of noticed it doesn't, if I'm down on hours, I don't feel like in the course of my career, people have come over, or managers come over, hey, what's going on, why are your hours down? They just kind of ignore it. I didn't know what you guys were kind of on that page.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Let me go first.
Yeah, and I
go first. Sorry. Hey, tough questions are my middle name.
Yeah.
First of all, when we have a dealer guy comes in and he's flagging 140 hours, folks, what that means is when we look in the labor book, it tells us that in order to replace this water pump, it's 2.1 hours. And so we should be able to do it for at least 2.1 hours. And sometimes the tech can't, and sometimes he can't, but it's still 2.1 hours. Now, it's 2.1 hours times $100 an hour, $150 an hour, whatever your labor rate is. So if you flag 140 hours a week, just do the math. First of all, would you get your calculator out and do how many hours is there in 5 days? It's 5 times 24, right?
Yeah.
So it's 150 hours, 170 hours for a week?
No, that's every 2 weeks.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. 75 hours.
Yeah.
In the independent market, I'll speak for myself, depending on certifications, ASE masters make the most money. And ASE is the Automotive Service Excellence for the rest of the folks. You certify in one test, front ends, and you're ASE certified. But when you do all 8 tests, you're a master. The masters make money at my shop. We pay them somewhere in the flag rate hour. So for every $125 we get, he may get somewhere between $22 and $40 an hour. And it's going to, I don't know what the dealership is. Now, as far
That's
as
comparable.
Okay. And in case it's true, you guys have to deal with a lot more people. And you guys have a lot more uncompensated time because you're chasing your own parts oftentimes. You're having to deal with the customer and the service rider and the shop foreman. And we don't have that infrastructure between the tech and the end result. And I'm speaking for independents generally.
Right.
You have better – most of the time you have better employment, 401ks, benefits.
Yeah. Benefits, yeah.
Sometimes you have better, not sometimes, most of the time you have better benefits, but many of us that I know have hospitalization for the husband, for the tech, plus his family if there's an extra cost. We have 401ks, and in my case, we match 50%. And then we have a 5-day work week with holidays off. So some guys have 6-day work weeks with holidays off. So there is a difference. We like the technicians, but I'll give you an example real quick. We had a Chrysler technician tell us that he was the best thing since sliced cheese. He came to work for us, and we really liked him. We liked him personally. He refused to work on anything but Chryslers, and he would bill unbelievable hours. And it was very uncomfortable. And it was uncomfortable for the rest of the shop because there's a lot of Chryslers that are gravy. And Andrew knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
And so he's in the vernacular of us, he's sucking all the gravy and the hard stuff he's passing. And so, Andrew, how old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay. I don't know about the management end of it, but I know there are shops in town that are paying shop foremen and general managers between 80 and 100 a year.
Right.
But he better be good to manage, you know, 5, 10, 15 bays or whatever. Now, I don't know where you're at with certifications and as far as advancement is concerned, but I can tell you this much. Advancement means everything to me. And so when it comes time that you can't bend over a fender anymore, historically, me and many other shops move you into a shop foreman position where you walk around and we hire a bunch of young guys and you mentor all of them. So you got 4 cars in a line, you got 4 young kids that just grew whiskers, but you got Andrew out there helping them diagnose it, watching them fix it, and doing the final test drive. So you're kind of a QC guy. Dave?
Yeah, and to answer your question, as far as worrying about what the tech's hours are, Yes, it's important. You obviously want everybody to basically be reaching their potential and doing as many hours as they possibly can with doing a quality job. But also in my shop, what we focus on a team atmosphere more than anything, and we want the shop to be successful. So whatever that takes, everybody pitches in, everybody makes sure that everybody's successful. Not just one person is doing all the hours and the rest of the guys are not. Everybody's pitching in and everybody's working together. Somebody needs to push a car, we're all pushing the car. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things. That's the way we do it.
And I can say that most of us in the small industry, not like the dealerships with 20, 30, 40, 50 bays, are of the same thing, but I am against group pricing. So the whole shop shares the benefit because you always got the lizard and you always got the top dog. And that's unfair right. to both everybody else because the lizard's holding up the bottom end and the top dogs are going, why am I taking his effective labor rate might be $40 an hour and mine effective labor rate's $41 an hour. And he's sitting there on the phone with his wife who's yelling at him and I'm working my butt off. Yeah. So there's as many bad businesses in the independent and chain market as there is in your environment. But if you're looking around right now, we can't hire enough people. And dealership right. techs are kind of valuable. And besides that, you come as a Chrysler. There's five cars out there that have double digits of the road. Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Honda, Toyota. Everybody else is a one percenter. So less than 1% of the cars on the road have a Subaru name tag on them or something like right. that. So you'd be very valuable. Why don't you go sniff around? Why don't you take a Saturday and go talk to people? You have nothing to lose.
The comfortableness of being in a dealership for 18 years, I think that's what scares me. I have four little guys, eight and under, and a wife that I support. And I think it's the fear of taking that leap and what's right. going to happen when I go into an independent shop. You know?
Okay. But I know a shop that gives away Rolex watches at 10 years, and he's given away 17 of them. So there's a lot of us out there that have some long-term guys working for us. 602-508-0960.
Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour at 11 o'clock. If you have a diesel, you better remember this name, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. I've known Nate for a very long time. He's a diehard service, repair, and parts guy. He does foreign and domestic light diesels. So if you got a Ford, a Dodge, a Duramax, a Chevy, you got a Cummins motor, you got a Power Stroke motor, whatever you've got, and you got a problem, then Strictly Diesel is a good guy. Real quick,
hey.
I just a minute. I've got former guys that work for me 40 years ago. One of them says this, I remember when we couldn't let a new tire out of the shop without cleaning the blue off the raised white lettering, number one. The other kid goes, because I'm excited, he goes, calm down, I'm having flashbacks from 1979. All right, go.
Hey, I just wanted to tell Andrew, you know, don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone, because I'll tell you one thing is, if you ever want to be a shop owner or a shop manager, you're going to have to get out of your comfort zone a lot. I know. I don't know about you, Mark, but that seems to happen to me just at least once a week or 10 times.
But it happens in both of our industries.
Both of our industries.
The independents go to the dealers and the dealers come in.
Absolutely.
All right. Rick, you're up next, buddy. Okay, Jim, you're up next.
Hi. I'm here.
Go ahead, sir.
I have a 2016 Ford Fusion. And I have an intermittent thing on my transmission. I'll be driving. It seems to be doing it. Only does when I'm going slow, like between 20 and 35, and it'll downshift. The first time it happened, I thought I got rear-ended. It was just like a slam, and it only does it. I can't recreate it. It only seems to do it when I'm in a tunnel downtown. It drives me crazy.
Okay.
And it only seems to do it in the summer months when it's warm. But I've tried doing it on the street.
Okay.
Nope.
All right, let us talk to you for just a minute. I want to ask you, or I'm going to tell you something I think you should do. I think you should manually shift it, and that will help everybody diagnose it. So you manually put it in first, yank, yank, yank. I think you should do that, and then hot and cold is an important issue.
Right.
So driving that is the most important part. Transmission problems is not anything that we can guess because it's all kinds of stuff. But the fact that intermittently it downshifts real hard would suggest to me that there's something lying to the computer. Maybe the speed sensor just went to zero. So when the speed sensor goes to zero, even though you're doing 20, the computer looks and says, 0 miles an hour, I need to be in first gear. And bam, it goes into first gear. That's just an example of the stuff that we see. I would call the shop that you do business with and say to them, who's the transmission guy in our neighborhood that you trust and that you would have your mother's car fixed at? And that's who I would go see.
And then go for a ride with them.
And then go for a ride. Insist on a ride.
Yeah.
Insist on a ride. You can duplicate it. Rick or Jim, I'm sorry, I got to move on. I got to call. Rick, you're up next. Rick, how are you?
Oh, just fine. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2010 Dodge Ram 1500, 5.7 Laramie.
Yeah.
And I bought it used. I bought it with like 79,000 miles on it. It's got about 82,000 on it. I changed the oil right away, calls for 520. Looking back at all the history and the records the owner gave me, it just says 520 multi-grade. It's like a $25 oil change out the door. I switched it over to a full synthetic with a really good filter. And I hear just a little bit more engine noise and stuff. Like, I don't know if it's lifters just a little bit or what. Would you suggest going to a heavier oil then? I've heard your conversations oil previously. What would you recommend?
I would recommend that you do this. Do your oil change, and at 1,000 miles, have somebody pull an oil sample, get on the internet, and find a place for oil analyzation. I want somebody to check my oil for content. Then at 2,000, pull it. You've got an engine noise. I want to make you know that that's okay because you're not going to have any metal. So let's pretend that the metal content on the first 1,000 miles is 1. Let's pretend it's 1 at 2,000, 1 at 3,000. No problem. But if it goes 1 to 10 and 10 to 40, then there's a problem. I don't think 530 or 5, what do you say, 530 or 520?
520 is what it calls for. And I don't know. All the records just say multi-blend and the oil changes are like $26 out the door.
Okay, so then what they're talking
like six
about?
To seven quarts.
Yeah, what they're talking about is they say multi-viscosity basic oil.
Yeah, right.
The other day, like I said to Dave, the other day, real quick, a friend of mine went and had his car done, and they charged him for a semi-synthetic oil change, but it's called premium oil change in their world, semi-synthetic, and it was $80, and we charged $45 to $65. Then they put 3,000 miles on his door sticker, which should have been a 7,500-mile door sticker.
Right.
That's what's going on in our industry right now. We're calling them in early, even though we're using a premium oil. But I agree with everything you said. I'm a little concerned with the noise you have, but that's what I would do is I would have my oil analyzed, and that will put you in complete comfort zone. Jack, you have to stay there because I have to break in about 20 seconds, and I'll get to you, I promise, immediately. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa, Main Street, and Stapley. He's just east of Stapley on Main Street on the south side of the road, been around for a very long time, 1970. And Brian and Thelma, I've known both their parents. I've known Brian's parents and Thelma's parents, and they were in the gas station business in the 60s and 70s. Those two young people come from good, honest stock. So if you're in Mesa, the only shop I can recommend is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, Stapley in Maine. Minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, Automatic Transmission Exchange is a great place, 40th Street in Washington. Phil's been around since Fred Flintstone days, and Automatic Transmission Exchange has been open since 1968. It's the only transmission shop in the valley I can recommend to you. Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. And Jack, it's your turn. How can we help you?
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, Mark.
You bet.
Hey, I got just a quick oil question. I know you've had quite a few of these questions, but I purchased a Chevron Supreme Synthetic Blend of 5W30 oil, and I was going to use it in my 2018 Altima with the four-cylinder engine. But I noticed the API rating on this said SP, and I think the one on my car says FN. I didn't know if that really made a difference or not.
It's A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, A, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. That's it. So S A was peanut butter, S B was a little better, C, D, E, F. We've been through the alphabet, and so to answer your question, you have no problems. It's always okay to use a better oil than the owner's manual calls for. It's always okay because you're stepping up.
Excellent.
Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Jack. You're more than welcome. What were we going to talk about? Whatever it wasn't going to be good.
Yeah, I don't think so. Well, I mean, after your heart stopped and we had to get that going again.
I'm sorry. I might probably made some people mad, and I'm sorry. I just feel pretty confident about this aftermarket warranty thing. I think it's one of the biggest ripoffs there's ever been, and I feel sorry for the people. It adds a day to their work because of all the phones and faxes and all that other kind of stuff. And you're talking to somebody that doesn't know horse crap from Shinola, and you're trying to explain to them that this is a power steering rack problem, and because it only happens in the morning and it's stiff in the morning and it's perfect after the fluid warms up, and you flushed it and you've put new fluid in it and it's still there and it's got a 200,000 miles on it, then we need to replace it. And the answer is no. Wait till it gets worse or something stupid like that. So yeah, I'm going to go home and change my underwear as soon as we're done. My wife's going to say, you acted like an ass. And I'm going to say, yeah, I did. So it's one of those things. 602-508-0960. You got to jump on fast because we're about 15 minutes from the end of this show. Our industry is a good industry, most of us.
Yep.
You brought up a good point. I'm going to walk this carefully. There are places in Arizona that have been sold to consolidators, and it's a big financial group that buys shops. Could be two, could be four, could be six, could be eight, whatever. They buy the shop for a whole lot of money. High-end shops like Dave's and mine. By the way, Dave's from Martin's Auto. He's at 16th Street South in Indian School. They buy guys like us. We go away, and they bump up sales. They have to. That's the return on their jillions and millions of dollars. So Dave and I were just talking, and that's happened. We're going to call it Tucson. It happened in Tucson, and what happened is the technicians are telling us that what was a five-day work week now turned into six, and now it's turning into seven. Well, obviously, that's a good idea if you want to increase revenue, but you're going to wear out your help. Otherwise, you better have two staffs. Because nobody in our industry wants to work 7 days a week anymore. Plus, wives don't like that at all.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want as an owner of a shop is to hear this. You say, who is it? This is Mrs. Salem. Can I have a word with you? That ain't going to turn out good. And first of all, I'm hidden from those knocks on the door because they got to get past the downstairs. But it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in your shop.
Right.
So you bring up a good point. It's... you need to be wary of tremendous price increases, but even more than that, you need to be wary if that's a neighborhood circle and the middle of the circle jumps their oil changes by twice and some of the other guys don't do it as well in that geographical area. So we got these dynamics where we've got these consolidators. It's really no different than a lot of the chain stores have been consolidated. Icon, whatever his name is, he owns all the Pep Boys.
Right.
And
Carl
so,
Icahn.
Carl Icahn. So he's consolidated a bunch of his shops. We're talking dealerships. Some of the dealerships today own, they call them points, but they own Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Honda, Toyota, Lexus, Cadillac. I mean, they have a flag from virtually every, and there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
But one technician from the Lexus store ain't going to make it at the Chevy store. And
right.
Because they're pretty specialized. And if you had a Lexus and you heard a barking noise every time you opened up the back door, they might be the best guy for you. You hope that they've seen it and heard it before. And in our industry, the independent market, you hope that they won't charge you for their total amount of experience. So because I've been there, I can fix this in 30 minutes. But I'm going to still charge you 4 hours, which is what it cost me at the very front side of this. It took 4 hours to find this. That's kind of what you got. Agree?
Agreed. Oh, absolutely. And you were talking about people that are burning their help out. You know, the thing of it is, it's hard to find one crew. It's hard to find another crew to fill all those extra hours. So, yeah, you end up burning people out. And that's one of the things. And, you know, we used to be open when we were in the gas station business, you know, we were service station. We were open 6 days a week and, you know, we worked And it got to the point where I just, my crew was just getting burned out, and they were mad at me on Friday, Saturday, and Monday for making them work Saturday, so it wasn't worth it.
In 1979 through 1985, I was 24 hours a day. I had three full crews.
Yeah.
24 hours a day at a gas station. And at nighttime, I ran three and four people. And they had a tough time hanging on to it. So who might we have on the caller right now?
That would be Jim.
Jim, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. Yes, I have a question. I have a 2016 Chevy 2500 Duramax. It has 62,000 miles on it. It always ran the voltmeter at 14. Now it's reading close to 15. Just wondering if that's something to be concerned about or not.
Well, two things strike me is I'd get a voltmeter and let's make sure what's coming off the battery is fairly being represented by the gauge. Okay?
Yes, went to, like, I don't know, the AutoZone or something like that. They said it's 14.8 is coming out, and the batteries are good.
Okay. It could be a bad, dirty connection because the alternator monitors the battery voltage, and it's kind of like we want 13 to 14 volts out of the alternator. So when it sees the voltage drop down to 12.2, the alternator is instructed to bring us back to 13 to 14. So I'm not quite – let me ask you this. Where's the red zone in your gauge? Is it north of 15?
I looked for that. No, it doesn't have one. It goes up to 19.
Okay.
But that's what I looked for. There is no red zone.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Is the needle in the middle of the gauge, left of the middle, right of the middle?
It's always been right at 12 o'clock, and now it's going to about 1 o'clock.
Okay. I think, I don't know if there's a problem. Well, let me ask you one more question. The top of the battery, is it dry?
Yes.
Okay. Why did I ask that?
Well,
because if we're overcharging it, we're going to boil it.
Right, absolutely.
And that's why I ask you that question is if we're boiling the battery, then it's going to be sweat, and there's going to be acid on the top of the battery. That's where you have the neighborhood kid come over and lick the top of the battery, and if his tongue burns. I'm teasing, everybody. I'm teasing. No, I tell you what you got. You got a radio guy that's 5 miles away, 10 miles away from us, Gil, and you call him, him lick the top of the battery. But I'm not quite sure I wouldn't clean the battery cables, and you got two batteries. I'm not quite sure that I wouldn't disconnect the negative on both of them for a little while. Let's do a reset. And let me ask you, I want you to be running down the highway with nothing on. I don't want the air. I don't want the heater. I don't want I don't want anything on. I want the radio on. I don't want anything on. And you can actually get a voltmeter that plugs into your cigarette lighter, and you can take readings from in the cab. So if my wife called me and she said she was in Montana in my Dodge diesel, and she told me she was on the north side of 14.8 towards 15 and maybe a little over, I'd ask her the same questions I ask you. And if she said, no, it's not sweating the battery, and no, I don't smell sulfur, and no, I don't have any effects, I'd say, come on home. That's what I would say.
Okay.
All righty?
All right, thank you.
You betcha. Good luck. That's the first time I've ever had that question.
Yeah.
I've never. Now, 15, 16, 17, 18 volts is altogether different. But when you're talking about 15.2, 15.3, well, 4.5, I'm taking it 4.5 to 15 or just a tad more. I'll tell you something else. I'm on a roll right now. I'm up in Pace, and a friend of mine says, we have lunch, a bunch of us old timers, gray haired. You have to have gray hair, and you got to have gray's no hairs to sit with us. So we're sitting around. One of them says, can you take me and pick up my truck? And I said, yeah. And he goes, on the way there, he goes, you know, they told me, it was dead, and I had to jump it. So I took it in, and they said, we think it's the alternator. And I said, okay, so tell me the whole story. Well, I've been sitting 6 months, and I had to jump start it and took it in, and they said they think it's the alternator. And I guess there's no thinking here.
Yeah, that's...
It's black or white. It's up or down.
Yeah.
So you're going to make me go home and get a voltmeter and an ammeter, and you're going to make me trick, and you're going to get it for free. He's a good friend. I mean, as a matter of fact, I bought and sold drugs when I was a cop with him back in the 70s, actually in the 80s.
Nice.
So he's a good guy. He's a good guy. So I go home, I get the meter, I take him, we pick up his truck, and then we find out they put semi-synthetic oil in it, and it's got a 3,000-mile oil change. Strike one for Mark Salem. And you get three strikes in, and you're never, your name of your shop's never coming out of my mouth again. So I take it home. What's a dead battery supposed to be? A battery that's fine, but the motor's not running, I should be clear.
12 volts.
12 to 13.
Yeah, 12 to 13 volts, yeah.
Because the alternator's going to be in that area. Now, when you start the car, what should the voltage drop to, plus or minus?
When you're starting it?
Yeah, you're cranking on it.
10?
Yeah, 9.6 to 10.
Yeah.
It's right. So I start it, and the voltage doesn't drop below 10.5. So I disconnect the ignition system, and I have them crank it over. It doesn't drop below 10.5. So then I start it up, and the needle goes to 13.4. So I turn on the headlights, and I'm doing all this fancy testing. Everything's fine. I have an inductive amp probe. I grab the wire at the back of the alternator, and it's pumping out 28 amps. I don't see, and then I shut it off, and I check the belt, and it's not slipping. I think it's an alternator. If one of my technicians said, I think it's an alternator, I would say, why don't you go back in the shop, take your lunch with you, and let me know what it is for sure. Could it be that it sat for 6 months and the battery's dead? Why don't we just charge the battery and then test the electrical system? Because in their defense, a little bit, they could have tested everything with the dead battery, and of course the readings are not valid.
Well, it's funny you said that, because I remember when I was a kid, and my dad, one of the things that he used to get so mad about was if the technicians would check an alternator with either a dead battery or the cables were so corroded, that used to just chap him. Oh, he used to get so angry about that, because a lot of times he would clean, you know, of course, once you clean those cables and you make a good connection and then you test it, your readings are totally different.
Did your dad, was he as emotional as I am?
Oh, he was really animated too, by the way.
So am I, but they can't see it. Yeah. They can't see me
really animated.
They can't see me standing up and waving my arms and making all kinds of signs with my, here, let me tell you what I say. If we have a bad, the alternator and the regulator have to watch the battery voltage. So if it drops below 13.5, 14 volts, then it fills in. But right. If you have a bad connection at the battery, it can't see the voltage. So the cables are dirty. The battery voltage to the alternator is 8 volts. So the alternator cranks up the old power and pours big-time voltage and amperage. But it can't get through the bad battery cables. So if you've got any kind of corrosion on the battery cables, you better clean those up before you condemn the alternator. The shop fell off my list. Okay, two things. Number one, they got a 3,000-mile oil change sticker on an oil that goes 7,500. Number two, I constantly do surveys of our industry. You know why?
Why?
So I can be at the 60 or 70% of the cost to the customer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I don't want to be half. I want to be at the 60 or 70%. I don't want to be 100%, way over everybody else. So when I say that our semi-synthetic oil change is between 45 and 55, I'm real close. Maybe 60, depending on 4 or 5 quarts.
Yeah.
This guy here was 80 for a semi-synthetic 5 quart. Then but he wouldn't write it down either. He wouldn't write it down. He says, well, just write it down on the work order that you think it's the alternator. Nothing on the work order.
Oh, no.
And nothing about the electrical systems testing that they did. And nothing about the battery charge. So the whole thing left a bad taste in my mouth. So I said to him, there's another shop in Payson I recommend. I'd like you to try him. Why? Because he bailed me out of a jam, and I've sent my mother-in-law to him, and I've sent a lot of other people to him. I've looked at the work orders, and I love what he does. I love how he communicates with the work order. I love he writes down what you said, and he writes down what he said.
Yeah.
I like his parts pricing. I like his labor pricing. I like that he's open on Saturdays, and I've been able to shake his hand numerous times, and I like him. Plus, his general manager and I go back 40 years. And so all of that together is somebody that I can recommend. But not all the shops are bad. I would say one out of 15 are ones that I would disagree with their business philosophy.
Well, and I tell you, one thing you said that was most important was this: get everything written down. If somebody tells you something, have them write it down.
Absolutely. Mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com.